Coming to you live from Allen Park, Michigan. It's the movie, it's not the movie change up podcast. It is the Hand Plus. Basically, if you watched our Disney Plus weekly review, it's that, but extended across all streaming platforms. We cover Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney, plus all your other favorite streaming platforms. If you got a show or a movie that's popping up on a streaming platform and you want us to talk about it, talk to the Hand and we'll get it on the show and we'll talk about it. We're going to break down, compare the streaming services to each other each week, but it kind of got to the point with Disney Plus where we felt like we were watching stuff for the show and stuff that wasn't really interesting us. And especially for Disney Plus, a lot of our reviews kind of boiled down to, hey, if you're a kid, you'll enjoy it. But if you're not, you know, it's probably not for you. And especially with their two main things being Star Wars and Marvel. And it's like, and we're so deep into both now that it's like, hey, if you like Star Wars, watch it. If you don't like Star Wars, this isn't going to change your opinion. Same with the MCU. If you're a big MCU fan, you're going to watch it. And if you're not, you're not going to watch it. And that's kind of just the end of it. So our reviews kind of got stale and boring, in my opinion. So I think doing this, something with various franchises, new franchises, even reality shows, and just the whole streaming gambit is going to be a lot more fun for us and then a lot more fun for you in turn to listen to. So, Tristan, I'll kick it to you. What are your thoughts on the expansion of this streaming platform? And if you're watching live on video, you see that logo up there up in the top right corner that says The Hand, We Handle Your Streaming. That was all Tristan's work. So congratulations and kudos to him for doing that. I kind of did the layout. So if you like the layout of this, that's me. If you think the layout sucks, that was somebody else. But yeah, Tristan, what are your thoughts?
If the logo was great, then it was on me. If you don't like the logo, then it was Joe's idea. You know, I'll put the rest of it on Joe. But yeah, I'm really excited for this because, yeah, Disney Plus was a lot of fun to do, but they were less expansive than I thought they would be necessarily for what they were doing. And like you said, it was all pretty much the same two IPs, and you know what you're going to get out of both of those IPs at this point. So I think it's a really exciting time to expand it too. Like, streaming was in this kind of Wild West era for a while where it was like Netflix was greenlighting everything they could think of, and so was HBO, and so was Hulu, to try and like compete on this like attention marketplace of these streaming platforms. But now we're seeing a kind of a crackdown. You know, we're seeing people realize like, oh, maybe we can't be spending like $1 billion on a movie for a Netflix account. You know, we got to figure out how to make this profitable here. So it's going to be a fun like year or two to see how these big corporations kind of crack down and figure out how to make this actually last long term, because we're seeing a lot of changes going on at HBO and that kind of thing. So it'll be a fun time to cover it and cover like that new side of it while we're also covering the actual shows that we're watching and the new shows, the new movies that drop. It's a chance to really expand what we get to talk about on the channel other than just the same properties everybody else is pretty much talking about. You know, how many Star Wars channels are out there, how many Marvel channels are out there. I wanted to do something a bit more diverse that can get us a chance to talk about some other stuff.
Yeah, and if you're curious how I came up with the name Hand, it was my genius and surprise thinking of, well, because I was looking at, oh, what do we want to cover? And I had written out on my notes on my phone, I had Hulu, or at the time I had HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, and then I had like Hulu and others at the bottom. And I realized the first letter of all of those spelled Hand. And then kind of between inception and creation, I was uncertain about the future of HBO Max, and I felt like, oh, that could kind of ruin my thing. So I just kind of substituted Hulu in there. And so now it's Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney, plus all your favorite other streaming services.
And you made a good call at seeing some HBO Max news. So yeah. Probably the best choice there.
But yeah, so without further ado, Tristan, why don't we kick it off with some Hulu news, some price changes.
So the format here for this show is going to be that we're going through platform by platform and essentially covering what we watched on that platform. And if there happens to be any news related to that platform going on, there's not usually a ton of streaming news, but lo and behold, the first platform we got here is Hulu, when we do have some headlines. So Disney just had their investor conference recently, and they announced some price changes. The one was for Hulu, where they're going to be increasing their price. If you have the ad-free version, like the premium version, you don't have to sit there and watch their terrible ads over and over again. You're going to have to pay $2 more. So you're going up to $13, or you were at $13 now, or you're going up to $15. And if you have the ad-free, where you got to watch those same 5 or 6 ads repeated every episode and every movie you watch until you go insane, You're paying $7 for that, and you're going to be going up $1 to $8. So how does that affect your view of Hulu, Joe? Does that change your view of the value at all, the $2 increase?
My girlfriend pays for Hulu. I don't. They could raise it to $50 a month, and if she's still paying for it, it doesn't affect me at all. Except she's currently not paying for Hulu right now. I currently actually do not have Hulu, so.
Oh, what? You know, I'll cover the Hulu content then. You know, don't worry, Joe.
I forgot about Hulu. That until just this moment. I'm like, wait, no, she was like, oh, I need to be careful with my money. I can't have Hulu this month. And I was like, okay. Whoops. Forgot about this show at that time.
The price goes up in December, so you still got some time to get that cheaper price. Yeah. December 8th, I believe it goes up.
And then if you're a sports fan, maybe look into the streaming bundle with Hulu, Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus.
Absolutely, because spoiler alert, the price for Disney Plus also is going up on December 8th. So you're definitely getting a really, really good value. The combination is $19.99 a month, I want to say, for all three. So that's really good deal. Yeah. So this week on Hulu, we had some interesting drops. A couple of these just dropped today as we're recording, so I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of these. We have Legacy, the story of the LA Lakers, one of the, if not the biggest basketball team ever, maybe outside of the Bulls. You have The Hate U Give from a couple of years ago, a pretty good, based off of a book about a young black girl who has kind of an encounter with a police officer, and it was very timely at the time it came out, and it's also a little bit of like a family oriented. It's not so dark and violent that you can't have like younger people watching it. So I think it definitely appeals to like the teen demographic, or you could watch it with your younger teens.
And now also, if you're a Star Wars fan, The Hate U Give stars Amanda Stenberg, and you know, if you want to see what they do in the future in the Star Wars, and there's some leaks and rumors dropping about that show, and that show sounds very interesting. So if you're like, oh, I'm curious about The Acolyte, and I want to know, you know, is the star of that show a good actor, then watch The Hate U Give. They star in that.
And I also want to highlight, you know, once in a while when I see a kind of weirder movie enter the fray here, and Hulu just this week added Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and 2 from Lars von Trier. Not just Nymphomaniac, but the director's cut, Joe. So if you want to see even more endless sex scenes that go on for hours, you can watch both extended cuts of Nymphomaniac on Hulu.
Hell yeah.
So, Joe, you don't have Hulu, but I'm still going to ask, did you have a highlight this week for Hulu?
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to talk about, and like this, so normally we will cover the previous week in streaming, just like with Disney Plus, we covered the previous week in Disney Plus, but this is our first ever show, so we're like, for the first couple shows, we'll probably cover the last few weeks in streaming. There's still newish shows, and one of the things I wanted to talk about for anyone that maybe doesn't know, maybe they don't go online and don't have a Twitter, see certain things pop up. If you're a reality television fan and you have not watched the most recent season of Love Island UK, which is currently on Hulu, you should check it out. It has two of the greatest reality television characters of all time with Davide and Ekin-Su, and they just know how to make great television. It's the premise of the show, if you haven't seen any of the Love Island versions or haven't heard anything about it, is you start off with five men, five women. They get coupled up, and basically you sleep in the same bed as your couple, and then every couple days they bring in new people. Maybe it's a new guy, a new girl, and then as new people come in, single people get eliminated, and you have a lot of tension and turmoil and drama. If you may have a couple that's been together for a few weeks now and they've chosen each other multiple times, but then maybe a new girl comes in and the guy's like, you know, I kind of like this new girl more than the girl I've been with. And so he, at the next recoupling ceremony, ditches his last couple and goes with this new girl, and then the old girl might get eliminated. So a lot of drama, a lot of intrigue, and then at the end, the UK audience votes for who they want to give £50,000 to.
Pretty cool.
Good television, great television. I can tell Tristan's like, fuck reality television. But
look, I mean, my mom loves reality TV, so you know you got to have TV for the moms too. My one question for you, Joe, is this is Love Island UK, and Peacock also has Love Island. Is that a different Love Island? Is that the US Love Island?
Yeah, so I was going to talk about that. The Love Island on Peacock currently streaming right now is the exact same show, but it's the US version of it. So it's Americans instead of the UK people, but I feel overall the few I've seen every season of Love Island USA and a couple of seasons of Love Island UK, and Love Island UK is far superior.
Look, I'll give it a shot. Joe, I signed up for my Peacock, so I would be thinking of going to the US version, but hey, if it's on Hulu, I'll check out the UK. I'll give it an episode if you're really recommending it, because I've had some fair share with like The Bachelor in Paradise and The Bachelorette and The Bachelor and that whole like collection of reality shows, and it sounds a lot like Bachelor in Paradise. I imagine Bachelor in Paradise like ripped this off essentially. Yeah, or the other way around.
I don't remember what is first, but it's very Bachelor in Paradise-ish. I would say it's but better drama and a better, I don't want to say plot, but a better, like, you see how everything's moving, if that makes sense. Where Bachelor in Paradise is more chaos, but not in the good way. It almost feels like make your own rules as you go, Bachelor in Paradise. And less fights, and less, I almost feel like, producer-led drama, if that makes sense for you. But another Hulu drop in the last few weeks is Prey.
Yeah, that was my highlight of the week this week. The Predator prequel, spinoff, reboot thing, Prey. It's not connected at all to the previous movies. There's a one little tiny, tiny Easter egg at the end that connects it to a different Predator movie, but it's not like, oh, here's Arnold Schwarzenegger and here's this and that. It's definitely its own story, and it does that by setting it in this totally different location for a Predator movie in 1719 in the Great Plains, and you follow these two Comanche siblings, Naru and Tabe, who Naru is the main character, and she's this young Comanche woman who wants to be taken seriously as a hunter. She wants to be someone who can go out there and hunt the lions, hunt the food for the tribe, but the kind of social norms of her tribe are telling her that she has to, you know, stick to her lane and stick around the tribe and kind of fit in her social role that she doesn't necessarily want to fit in. And she's played by Amber Midthunder, who is a very up-and-coming kind of actress. She had some small roles on, like, Banshee and a couple of I think she was on Fargo for a couple of episodes. Like, she appears here and there in like small roles and things, but the one thing I noticed her in was The Ice Road with Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. Not a great movie, but she plays also a Native American woman in that movie that is along the ride with him on that movie. But this is definitely her starring breakout role, and she's kind of out on this hunt, and in the morning she sees this ship crashing out from the sky, and then she starts tracking down this invisible creature that seems to be going around and killing all the animals in the forest. And of course, we know that creature is the Predator, and they build it up, and you're getting little tiny reveals here and there of the Predator until like you finally see him go unleashed, and it feels like a great build up there. And I think that's something that it did a great job here of making it feel small and then building up to something exciting. And some of the previous Predator movies, the sequels, have been like very confusing and very huge and like absolutely this like slashers movies at sometimes, and this turned it down and really found like a simple way to reboot this franchise and a way that I hope they can do more of. Like, I would love to see the Predator in a totally different time and place in the next movie, in a totally different location. You know, you can put the Predator anywhere and make something exciting out of it, you know. And even though this was a different location, it still kind of was like a jungle-ish location, you know. It was a forest and the thick trees and everything else. So it would be cool in this next one to maybe see something like totally different, you know, go to like a feudal Japan or something, and you can be like way out of your realm.
Yeah, I've seen, like, this was kind of what I was hoping like Stranger Things would be, is like in after the first season, like they had the monster and they fought it, and then it's like, oh, they're coming out with Stranger Things season 2. And to me, I haven't watched the most recent season of Stranger Things. I'm kind of falling behind. I've gotten busy and other things. But I just remember I thought it'd be cool if, like, each season was a different time period kind of going up against this monster. And I think it'd be kind of interesting if they were like, this is Prey, and then maybe this is kind of like the quote-unquote Prey franchise, where you can do Prey, this, and then you have Prey colon something else, and you can have feudal Japan, or what if a predator dropped in, like, ancient Roman times, or... And you see, like, have a gladiator fight, you know, all these gladiators fighting each other, and then, like, they open the gates, and normally it'd be, like, unleashing a tiger, but this time it's unleashing the Predator, and then that unleashes the Predator basically onto the Greek city, and all these gladiators have to team up to take out the Predator. Come on. That's just sounds like a great movie.
Yeah, that's definitely what this movie convinced me of more than anything. Like, you can get a lot out of a simple location, and a lot of that comes from Dan Trachtenberg, who directed this. He also directed 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is another kind of attempt at rebooting a franchise that went pretty well, and then the franchise never really went anywhere after that reboot, unfortunately. So I'm wondering if this one will be another kind of shot in the dark here, and then it never really materializes, or if it's going to actually keep going in the way that Cloverfield couldn't. I was really impressed by his direction here, though. He got a lot of visual flair out of this location. You get to see the big Great Plains, like these wide vista shots, and you get to see these really beautiful nighttime shots with, like, they're running out with these torches, and it's like all you can see is like the glow of the orange and like barely in the black, and it really, really well done outside exterior shots, especially at night. So if you want to see something that was actually shot like on a location with real like trees around and not like a computer screen showing trees in the background, I think you did get a lot out of this. And the plot is not necessarily going to be like groundbreaking. You know, the predator lands, she's got to hunt down the predator. Can she defeat the predator before he kills everybody? You know, will she not? You pretty much know what you're getting from this kind of a movie. You're not going to get a lot of big, huge, crazy reveals or anything like that. So that to me could be a knock on it. Like, you get what you're going to expect. You know, the poster is the movie here, and you're not really going to have any moment where you're like, oh, I didn't expect that, or I wasn't seeing that coming. You know, everything you're going to get is what you're expecting to get. So if you're not necessarily into this kind of a movie, this kind of action, this kind of like a building kind of schlock action, you might not get much out of this. But I think if you have any connection to the Predator franchise and you just want to see some fun, unique visual action, this is a great watch. And this is what makes me really happy that we're doing this show, because I'm not totally sure I would have came around to watching this if we hadn't done this show this week.
Definitely, definitely. All right, anything else you have to say about Prey before we wrap up Hulu?
Nope, that's all I've got. Highly recommend Prey.
All right, so
there is a Comanche dub out there if you want to see it in the original, in the natural language of the characters, but it is not performed by the actual actors. It's dubbed over, so I ended up not watching that version. But it's out there if you want it, and it's very unique because I think it's the first feature film ever released dubbed in Comanche at release.
Yep. All right, so that wraps up our discussion on Prey. As far as Hulu goes, this week, on August 17th, we got On the Count of Three. It's Gerard Carmichael starring dark comedy, and friend of the show, co-creator of the movie Change Up channel, Johnny Dupe. It's number three currently on his 2022 list, so I'm definitely excited to check that out. I really don't know anything about it other than Gerard Carmichael is in it.
I think he directs it also.
Okay, he directed it too, so I'm definitely excited to check it out. Looking forward to getting Hulu again so I can watch this movie.
Something else to look out for on Hulu this week is Mike Tyson bio series. It has now come under some serious PR fire because apparently Mike Tyson not only is not involved in this, but he wasn't paid, he wasn't consulted, he wasn't given anything for this. Hulu kind of just took his life story and made the movie. Yeah. I don't know how you can do that without getting the permission of the person who I imagine owns the rights to his story, but there's a whole lot of drama going on, and Mike Tyson is not at all happy about this. He's had some harsh words for Hulu and for the executives who made these choices to make the show and not tell him. It's not the first time Hulu has done a bio series and not consulted the people involved. Pam and Tommy about Pamela Anderson and her sex tape scandal, she was not involved in that conversation at all. She didn't get the permission. She didn't get paid. She got nothing out of that. So Hulu seems to have a little bit of a problem here with adapting stories and not consulting the people involved or even paying them for the rights to their story.
Yeah. And it sounds like MGM is having a similar thing with movie rights of just kind of not really consulting the creator of a franchise and also the face of the franchise and someone who directed multiple movies of the franchise and trying to make a Victor Ivan Drago spinoff of Rocky, and Stallone's like, but no, don't. And they're still moving forward with it, but that may not work because it sounds like I'm blanking on the actor that played Ivan Drago's name, but he had no idea that Stallone wasn't involved, and it kind of sounds like he backed out after finding that out. But
yeah, it'll be curious what happens with this Mike show.
Yeah, all right.
It'll be curious if this blows over or what. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm also, because of that, I'm not super interested in the Mike Tyson show. Like, yeah, I heard about that, and I was like, I wasn't really dying to watch it, and now I'm just gonna probably just avoid it because I don't feel like supporting that mindset of we're just gonna make shows and movies without consulting the people around it or about it and just make our own
thing. Yeah, that's
thing.
Pretty rough.
All right, so I think that moves us over to our next topic of Amazon Prime.
Yeah, we've got Amazon Prime. This week on Prime, we've got a couple of new drops. They did a reboot of A League of Their Own, the all-female baseball team movie. I've seen the movie. I have not watched the rebooted series. Not getting great reviews.
I saw the last... I've never seen the full movie. I saw the last half of the movie one time because when I sleep, I like the TV on, and I woke up one time in the middle of the night and The League of Their Own was on, and I couldn't fall back asleep, so I just kind of watched the last half of the movie, and it was solid. You know, the part I watched wasn't really dying to watch the rest of it, I guess, but it was okay.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It has some memorable scenes for sure. I think the coach in there is really funny and quotable, but I have... The amount of interest I have in watching a rebooted version of this is like less than zero. This is one I'm going to be skipping for sure.
Yeah.
We've got 13 Lives, a movie I drafted for our 2022 movie draft, saying it was going to win Best Picture. I don't think that's going to happen. Does not seem like my prediction is going to pay off here. 13 Lives did drop on Amazon Prime, though. It's about the rescue of the young soccer team who got stuck in the cave a few years ago, and it's a dramatization of that. There was recently a really, really good documentary on that. I think it was called The Rescue, and this is a dramatization of that exact event. So if you remember that, it was a really, really big event at the time. So maybe this is a good take on it.
Yeah, this also kind of reminds me of the epidemic and going on in movies of, hey, here's a story of a bunch of, here's a story that happened to a number of brown people, and now we're going to tell the story to the three white people it happened to also affect.
What was your highlight this week on Prime, Joe? Did you watch anything?
I'll be honest, I didn't watch anything on Prime. I'm going to definitely work on that for the upcoming weeks and making sure I, you know, watch the stuff that's coming out on the various streaming services. But nothing on Prime stuck out to me. I looked up the other day of what should I watch, and nothing really drew my attention of like, oh, I need to be watching this before our episode. So my highlight of Amazon Prime does not exist because... I'm going to try to watch The Boys, but by the time I get around to watching it and finish the season, it'll be long past the time anyone cares to hear my review for it. So, if that look, time hasn't already passed.
Well, I think that's part of the show. You know, you watch what you're going to watch, and some weeks there's a lot to watch, and you're not necessarily going to get to everything. And for me, the highlight of Amazon Prime that we talk about, it's been a while. The time for talking about it has kind of passed, and Sonic 2, that came out this year, and it was recently added. It was on Paramount Plus. I watched it on Paramount Plus, and this week it was added to Amazon Prime, so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to watch just Sonic 2 again. You know, gave Sonic 2 another watch. Really, really entertaining. I think it's a huge step up from the first one. Great visuals, really fun action. You know, you get Sonic and Knuckles and Tails all together on the screen, and they look so, so good and so cool, and that brought me back to some great, great nostalgia. So... you got some 90s style Jim Carrey if you're into that for your nostalgia. You got some Tails and Sonic and Knuckles banter for your nostalgia. You got it all in this one. And yeah, I think it's a really, really visual spectacle and a feast. And if you have kids, they're going to love this. And I don't think you need to be a kid, though. Obviously, I mean, I liked it a lot. It's in my top 10 of the year this year still. So I definitely recommend watching Sonic 2. And it looks really good on Prime 2. It's in a 4K stream. So I definitely recommend that.
Nice.
And I want to quickly shout out Better Call Saul. I'm watching that through Prime. Technically, okay. It's on AMC Plus, but I signed up through that on Prime. And the finale is airing, I believe, as we're speaking. So,
nice.
Good run there, guys.
I've watched Breaking Bad through once. I have not seen an episode of Better Call Saul, and I feel like I should be watching it. But now it's almost one of those things where it's so deep into it that I'm so behind on the conversation that in, like, 10 years, I'll probably be like, you know, I need to watch Breaking Bad again. That's, like, a good show. Like, maybe a show, like, I have a kid and that kid's, like, 13. And I'm like, you need to be watching good television. Here, let's watch Breaking Bad. Then Breaking Bad will end and be like, you know what? I had already seen Breaking Bad. You watched it for the first time, but we can both discover Better Call Saul together.
I like that fantasy, Joe. And yeah, it's a great show. I like it a lot. And depending on how it wraps up tonight, the series finale, it may end up being I might prefer this Breaking Bad. It's not as exciting. It's not as action-packed, but I think the characters are really, really compelling, and there's not a lot of fat on here. In Breaking Bad, I felt like there were scenes where it was like, oh, Maria shoplifting for a whole season, and now it's going to be, you know, Walt Jr. getting some drama going on in his life. And I feel like every character in Better Call Saul is just, like, very, very compelling and developed and complex, and I'm going to be sad to see it go tonight, but it was an awesome run. Between Breaking Bad and this, it's like, you can't beat that on TV, man.
Yeah. I'm curious what Vince Gilligan's going to do next, because he says he's done with the Breaking Bad universe, at least for a while. People always say, oh, I'm done with this, and then they eventually come back, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does another show, and if that lasts 4 or 5 seasons, and then he comes back with something else.
I definitely need a break, I think. Give me a couple of years off to let the Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul hang over me for a little bit, and then see what you want to do next, you know?
Yeah.
Coming up this week on Prime, we have Making the Cut Season 3. If you don't know about this show, it's a competition show. You talked about a reality show earlier. This is also a reality show. It's essentially the exact same thing as Project Runway. It's even including two of the same people, Heidi Klum, who was the host of Project Runway, and Tim Gunn, who, if you know a fashion designer, he's the one you probably know by appearance. You know, he has like the slicked back white hair, and he's always wearing the super, super nice suits and the white glasses, and he has a really distinct look. So if you know his face, you probably know who he is. And the two of them left Project Runway to go do this show on Amazon Prime. They're going into the third season now. So if you want to check out some dressmaking competition, that's dropping this week. We got one for her, so let's do one for him, Joe. 8:20, we got RoboCop.
Hell yeah.
You know, you got the two parallels here of entertainment. You've got a reality show about dresses, and you've got RoboCop. So
half
what are you
man,
watching this week, Joe?
Half robot, all cop. Probably neither of these. I've seen RoboCop. It's good. It's fine. It's not a movie I go to all the time. If I, like I brought up earlier, if I'm going to fire up Amazon Prime, the first thing I'm probably going to go to and watch is The Boys.
I definitely recommend The Boys. I had a great time with that. I might watch RoboCop. I haven't seen it since I was like a kid. It might be one to revisit and check out. I'm hoping this week to watch Paper Girls on Prime. I was a huge, huge fan of that comic book, and they adapted it into a series that just kind of like dropped out of nowhere with no flair or fanfare or reaction or anything. So I'm like, I guess they weren't very confident in the Paper Girls adaptation, but I'm going to give it a college try. You know, if the camera was a little bit taller, you'd see that just above the top of the poster right there, I have the whole series of Paper Girls lined up on like a display above my room. So I'm a huge fan of that series. So any chance I can get to see a version of it, even if it's not necessarily great, I'll check it out.
All right. So that kind of wraps up Amazon Prime, I believe. We want to move
it
on
does.
To
heading
Netflix.
Over to Netflix, the OG streamer. New this week on Netflix, we have The Nice Guys in 2016, a great comedy. I know you're a big fan of The Nice Guys as well.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was one of my favorite movies that year. I was really hoping we'd get a sequel, and there was even talks of like a sequel series or maybe a gender swap series, but none of it all kind of fell through. So I think.
What is that movie about, Joe?
I think we're done with the Nice Guys universe. Basically, Nice Guys is two private investigators have to team up to solve the murder of a porn star. And, you know, it stars Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. It's a great comedy dynamic. I'd like to see them teamed up in a movie together again. One of my favorite things about the movie, and I'm blanking on the director's name. But speaking of Predator, he wrote and starred in the original Predator, directed at Iron Man 3.
Yes, it's in my head, you know.
Yeah, he's a
good... Shane Black.
Shane Black, there we go. You know, a lot of his movies are set around Christmas. But yeah, it's a good, fun, R-rated kind of action comedy. But my favorite story about this movie isn't even about the making of about the movie itself. It's about like something that happened behind the scenes, and they're out filming the movie, and Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling and a bunch of the cast and crew are just drunk at this bar, and Ryan Gosling told this story in a late night show. Ryan Gosling just hammered, absolutely hammered beyond belief, and Russell Crowe and at the bar is the rugby team that Russell Crowe owns is playing on television. And Russell Crowe's going over all these plays with Ryan Gosling, exactly how it's going to happen and exactly like what happens in every play. And Ryan Gosling, you know, he's watching Russell Crowe put all these things together, and he thought Russell Crowe was some rugby savant. And then he's watching the TV, and they cut to Russell Crowe in the stands, and he's like walking onto the field, and Ryan Gosling does a double take, and Russell Crowe was like, yeah, this match happened like 4 years ago. I was and it was the championship match that they were replaying. And Ryan
hilarious.
Gosling was like too drunk. Russell Crowe thought Ryan Gosling knew this whole time that this was an old game, but Ryan Gosling just thought Russell Crowe was some rugby genius, being able to predict plays and know how everything was going to happen.
Yeah, and the mind-blowing reality of I'm looking at the TV and Russell Crowe just walks out and you're like, what?
Yeah. That's my tangent on The Nice Guys, which everyone should watch.
We've also got the latest season of Riverdale, season 6. If you want to watch some CW trash, I saw today that the average viewer of the CW is 58 years old, according to the CW.
Did not so that's expect insane. That.
That's like,
what a figure. That's a crazy demographic. 45 years off of that, but
I know. Riverdale. Look, I watched the first couple seasons. It's entertaining if you like your camp, but even me, 6 seasons of a camp is a little bit much, you know. The 7th season, I think, is the last one. So you got this season and the next season, you're done. You know, you almost made it. You might as well finish it. You've also got Dope from 2015. I think you like that movie. I like that one.
Yeah, a really great movie. It's like Risky Business of the 2010s, essentially.
Some I really like it a lot. It's kind of like this street level. It really isn't much like Risky Business. It's kind of stuck in this kind of drug situation where he's got to deliver. It's been a little while since I've seen this, actually. He's in like Los Angeles, right? And he's got to deliver it.
Yeah, it's I can't remember the main guys. Or it's Shameik Moore, who is the voice of Miles Morales in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And then you have Tony Revolori, right? From Spider-Man, or Spider-Man. Also from Spider-Man Homecoming. And the Spider-Man Home trilogy, essentially, is Flash Thompson. And then the actress that was, I guess, technically played Iris West in Justice League for half a second and was supposed to be in the Flash movie and all that, but I don't believe she's in any of the DC prop movies anymore. Basically all kind of our friends in modern day LA, but they're all obsessed with like 80s and 90s hip hop culture, and they start selling drugs and start selling weed, and it's just kind of a fun coming of age teen comedy.
I definitely recommend that one. I'm going to give that a rewatch because as we're talking about it, I was remembering how much I like that. And a lot of it I don't remember too well, so I'm going to give that another watch. We've also got Bo Burnham's Inside Outtakes. So these are the cut scenes from Bo Burnham's Inside that came out last year and was a huge, huge success for Netflix. And I haven't seen these outtakes yet, but I'm definitely going to watch them because I really, really liked Inside. It was in my top 10 of the year last year. And we've got the Woodstock 99 docuseries. Netflix loves their documentary series, and now they've got one out there on the disaster of Woodstock 99. If you are unaware, they attempted to do another Woodstock in 1999, and it went very, very, very badly. There was chaos all throughout. There was really, really bad rain, tons of mud. People were like bathed in mud, throwing mud at the stage, and it was mass chaos. So I'm looking forward to giving that documentary a watch because I'm sure there's some great footage in there of. And maybe some interviews of like what it was like to be there on that stage. I know Green Day performed that day, and there's some really, really cool footage of them getting in like mud fights with the fans, and it really turned into chaos. So it might be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about Woodstock 99, so I'd be interested to check it out.
And then you've got Netflix's movie of the week, which is Night Shift. Jamie Foxx stars as a person who's hired on to take down vampires, I believe it is. And he's in LA, and it's his job to hunt down vampires. It's gotten surprisingly good reviews, especially for a Netflix original. I know some of those are shots in the dark in terms of quality, but this one looks pretty promising. I'm gonna give it a shot.
I saw the trailer and it reminded me of someone wrote like a spinoff of Bright, because the Max Landis written movie from a few years ago starring Will Smith, and they expected that movie to be good and then it wasn't. And they're like, well, guess I can't use my Bright spinoff, and they just reworked it into its own thing.
Very much feels like a Bright movie. I wouldn't be surprised if that literally happened.
But yeah,
what was your highlight this week on Netflix, Joe?
Netflix for me, the first season of this show debuted like early pandemic, and my girlfriend had watched it, but I was just scrolling through and I'm like, oh, this show looks interesting, and she says, oh, I watched the first season, and second season like literally just dropped a few days ago, and that is Indian Matchmaking. Another reality television show. You're going to find out if you want new, interesting reality TV shows you need to be watching, I'm the person that's going to be recommending them to you. So basically, this Indian woman is like in charge of like all the matchmaking. Honestly, in my opinion, she's not very good at her job. She's just kind of bad at it. But so all these people of various cultures within India come to her, and looking to be match made. A lot of them are older, you know, a lot of, in their culture, you're expected to be married like in your early 20s. And maybe some of them, it just is taking them longer. And now they're in their mid-20s, late-20s, maybe early-30s. And they're like, I haven't found my person yet. I want you to matchmake. And you have a lot of arranged marriage in this culture. And so it's kind of interesting seeing a lot of these different people's perspectives. Some of the – and it's – and you continuously follow the same people. Some people come in, like, maybe on episode 3, and they're kind of out by episode 6. Some people are coming in episode 1, and they're still here midway through season 2. I'm midway through season 2 right now. It's not a thing where it's like a new person every episode. And but it's interesting to see the dynamic between certain people. Some people are like super, very traditional, and they're basically like, hey, whoever my mom approves, I'm good with. And other people are very like westernized or Americanized, because some of the people live in India still. Some of these people live in America. And some of these people, I almost get the vibe that they would rather just do normal dating and, you know, just kind of what people in America, you know, assume is normal dating. But they almost feel like because of their parents and societal pressure and family pressure that they kind of have to go through this arranged marriage style, because that's what their parents did and that's what their grandparents did. And so you kind of see their mental wrestling with that of they want, especially with the women, because they want someone who has more modern Western values, especially when it comes to the dynamics in a relationship. But then they're going through this matchmaking service where a lot of the guys who are going to be older are going to want more of the traditional style dynamic. So kind of an interesting watch. Definitely, it's definitely not like a trashy love show. I almost think it's more just kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of like a dive into a culture I really didn't know anything about.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. It sounds way different than Love Island, which is just like, let's put some trashy people on camera and have them like act it up. You know, this feels like you're genuinely getting a look into something unique that, especially in our culture in the United States, we're very much like in our own lane, in our own zone. We don't even think about other cultures a lot of times, you know, and I think that's a lot of the appeal of some of these documentaries. They give you a chance to get out of your own little bubble.
Yeah, I definitely would recommend checking that out if that sounded interesting to you.
For me, the highlight of the week, I'm not going to talk about these too much because I'm sure you've all, if you haven't seen them, you've heard people talk about them for your whole life. So my pick this week was this original Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy. It just got added to Netflix this month, so it's only been on there for a few days. And these are somewhat like sought-after movies because they kind of pop up on different platforms here and there every once in a while. They never really stay long. So I took a chance to rewatch all three of these Spider-Man movies, and I had a great time with them. And like Sam Raimi is back in the conversation. Spider-Man is way back in the conversation. So I thought it was a perfect chance to go back and revisit these movies that, for me, these were the movies that made me like fall in love with superhero movies and made me fall in love with like the action blockbuster and that kind of stuff. So I had so much nostalgia for these, and I don't think the nostalgia blinded me too much, maybe a little bit. I won't lie. But I think that what's so impressive about these is the unique kind of feel and tone to him. You know, Sam Raimi has his very unique tone and touch, and you, when you rewatch these, you realize just how much that touch is all over this, you know. And we look at movies like Eternals, movies like Doctor Strange that come out today, and you see little tiny touches of the artist in there, and people are like, oh wow, Eternals, that was like such a Chloe Zhao movie, you know. Doctor Strange 2, that was such a Sam Raimi movie. But you watch this and it's like, this is a Sam Raimi movie with Spider-Man in it, you know. And I think that works so well for these movies. They're really, really fun. The third one, of course, is a bit of a step down. We all know that. But honestly, I think it's not nearly as bad as you make it out to be, especially compared to some of the bad movies you've gotten in the genre since. I think all three of these hold up pretty well. They all have really great moments, at least, and really great action sequences and effects. Even the third one has some really good Sandman effects. So I definitely recommend giving these a watch on Netflix.
Not gonna lie, I think I've seen the third one the most out of all of them, because it used to play on FX and FX movies all of the time when I was in high school. And so it's not like I would seek it out, but I'd just be flipping through the channels and it would be on. I'd be like, I guess I'll watch this.
Yeah, these are classic early 2000s movies. You know, we wouldn't have the genre we have now. We wouldn't even have the industry we have now if it wasn't for these movies. Between this and X-Men, but I really think this hit on a whole nother level compared to X-Men. Like, anyone who watched movies was talking about Spider-Man 2 when that came out. You know, these feel like cultural touchstones. So I definitely think if you haven't watched them, if you're young maybe and you weren't kind of in the alive even, or you weren't, you know, in the movie viewing age when some of these came out, I think these are definitely ones that are worth watching and holding up. And you get to see what it was like to see superhero movies back in the old days, you know, before it was the big franchises and the big universes. And it was just kind of like these action movies that happened to take off. So it's a point of history.
Yeah, definitely. Weird Al didn't write a parody song about the X-Men movies. He wrote Ode to a Hero based inspired by a parody of Piano Man about the Spider-Man trilogy. So
we have quite a lot
to step their game up if they want a song about them.
We have quite a lot dropping this week on Netflix, Joe. We have a Netflix original film. Their movie of the week this week is Look Both Ways. Lily Reinhart plays a woman who get to see her life playing out in two parallel timelines. You know, we're seeing a influx of multiversal things this year. It's what, the third or fourth multiverse movie of the year so far?
We got Everything Everywhere All at Once, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. I'm trying to think if anything else.
Those are the big two.
Yeah, those are the big two.
But yeah, I'll probably give this a chance. I watch most of the Netflix movies, I won't lie. They're nice passable entertainment when I'm at work, so I'm going to give this one a watch. We've also got a couple of new additions here. Masters of the Universe Season 3, Kevin Smith's produced animated show. Did not get great reviews, but I'm kind of happy for him. You know, he's managed to keep it going for 3 seasons, so good for him. They must be getting the numbers, you know?
I'm going to be honest. I've heard about that, like they were making it and that it was going to come out. I didn't realize that it had even come out already, let alone that Season 3 is about to drop.
Yeah, well, you got Season 2. And you've also got Tekken Bloodline dropping this week, an animated series based off of the fighting game Tekken. Normally, this would not be on my radar at all, but Netflix recently did the animated series Arcane, which is based off of League of Legends, and it was a really, really shockingly good show. I've never played League of Legends, but I had a great time with the show. So if this manages to be similar to Arcane, where it's like, sure, you might get some more out of it if you know Tekken, but you don't need to know Tekken. It might still be a really cool action series. And if they can pull that off, I think that's a really good opportunity, because video game IP is kind of taken off and people are really trying to make it work. And it's not working very well on movie side. So maybe the animated series side is where they're going to have it work. Because I would honestly say Arcane is like among the best, if not the best, video game adaptations that I've seen. So if they can tap the energy and give us something good out of Tekken, I'd be excited for that.
Yeah, because I know The Witcher has gotten good reviews so far. And I mean, that's live action, but it's still a series. My question for you is Sonic and or Sonic 2 the best live action video game movie we've ever gotten?
If we're talking video game movies, it's Sonic 2 for sure. I think that movie really captures the game so well, and it doesn't just repeat beats from the game. You know, it's like it has the aesthetic of the game. But you look at something like Uncharted that also came on Netflix this month, and to me that just took a bunch of moments from Uncharted, a bunch of like things that you think of Uncharted being, and kind of like just put them in the movie and didn't really make it work, you know. And the casting didn't work, the performance didn't work, the writing didn't work, and it just feels like they were kind of throwing stuff in there. And you compare that to Sonic 2, where it feels like they're really thinking about like what would be cool in this scene, what would actually kind of fit in the scene, rather than what can we throw in from the games that people already will know, you know?
I haven't seen the Uncharted movie, but I know it's bad because I saw a thing on like TikTok or Instagram of a scene where I think it's the main thing that was in the trailer of him falling with the plane and like hanging on the boxes and he lands in the water. And then he comes out of the water and he says something to a guy in a beach chair. And the guy in the beach chair was like, that happened to me too. The guy in the beach chair is the voice of the Uncharted guy. Nathan Drake in the video games. And I'm like, that moment would only happen in a bad movie. A good movie would not have that moment of the voice actor from the video game being like, that happened to me too.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up what you can expect. A lot of unnecessary quipping. You know, you've got Tom Holland in the lead, so don't watch Uncharted. You got better stuff to watch.
Like India Matchmaking.
I'm pretty sure Uncharted is like number 2 in the US right now on Netflix, something like that. So people are watching it.
And that's why Netflix is hemorrhaging viewers.
All right. Netflix. We've covered Netflix. We are all the way on to Disney Plus now. The D of the hand, Joe.
All right, and I can drop some news there. So like we talked about earlier, $8 month subscription will soon get you ads. Curious what that those ads are going to be. Is it going to be ads for just other Disney properties? Like, hey, watch Monday Night Football on ESPN. Or is it going to be like actual genuine commercials? I don't know. I don't know if they've released that yet. But so starting December 8th, Disney will be adding commercials to its current price of $8. Otherwise, your ad-free price is going up $11, which is a $3 increase. And I'll probably just increase my $3. I don't want to pay for ads. I assume this was their plan from the beginning. We'll give a cheap price to get a bunch of viewers, and then when we're at the viewer amount we like, we're going to make that the ad version, and then the ad-free version is going to be a little more expensive. I'm curious what the ad layout's going to be. Is it like HBO Max, where you turn on a show or turn on a movie and you get two or three ads and then the show starts, or are they going to break up the show or movie with ads? Hopefully it's the former and not the latter, because that'd be annoying watching a movie and then being like, buy OxyClean. And I'm like, I don't want to buy OxyClean. I want to watch The Lion King, damn it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. $3 is a decent increase, and it's a little bit annoying because $7.99 was like the starting price, and now that starting price is going to get you less than what it was originally getting you. You know, you think if you're going to introduce an ad tier, it would be like cheaper than the one that we already have, but they're playing a bit of a game, I guess. They're upping the price and everything, and then I'm not sure though. I mean, $11 a month is not that much. You know, when it starts getting up to the 15, the Netflix prices, that's when I start questioning myself a little bit and going down on the scale here. But $11, I can do $11, but they're getting close, you know, especially Disney Plus, because like you mentioned, Disney Plus has like its two IPs and nothing else has managed to take off, you know, so I can see a reality where I get checked out enough on Star Wars or checked out enough on Marvel that I'm saying, you know what, there's not really a new show I'm interested in coming out for like 6 months. Maybe I'll just cancel on Disney for now.
Yeah, Disney Plus seems to be good at three things: Marvel, Star Wars, and documentaries. They haven't really launched. I mean, maybe this Willow show that's coming out in a few months will be good, but other than Marvel and Star Wars, they don't have anything that anyone... In the documentaries they have, I haven't seen anything pop off and be something people have talked about online.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems like that's all that seems to hit. But I do think they've been doing a good job expanding their roster. And we have an example of that this week. We have the I Am Groot shorts, which is their typical Marvel IP stuff. But then we also have the Orville, an ABC show that got really good reviews that I've been wanting to see. But now I finally got the chance to watch it. You got Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy. He's the lead of this live action series, and he's essentially a Star Trek parody that I've heard evolves into being just like a genuine Star Trek type of show, where like at the beginning, it's like a bunch of jokes and fart jokes and that kind of thing. But then by like the second season, you're having genuine like plots and genuine sci-fi and that kind of a thing. So it could be a really fun one to watch, especially with that growth from like a slapstick, goofy comedy to something that might be a little bit more serious.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that. I've heard a lot of people say it's the best Star Trek out right now, and that's including Paramount Plus pumping out as much Star Trek as they can. I've heard basically Strange New Worlds is the only Star Trek show basically that's been on Paramount Plus that's worth anything. Part of me feels like Seth MacFarlane saw like, oh, Paramount Plus is pumping out a bunch of new Star Trek, or like, let me make a Star Trek parody, and then he realized it's all crap, and he's like, well, you know, I'm just going to make a good Star Trek show even if I can't call it Star Trek. Because everything else sucks.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to watching that, because I'm very much checked out on this current era of Star Trek. I haven't given a shot to anything. I watched just a couple episodes of Discovery, but not much after that.
I would say I haven't watched it, but Jordan has been on this show before. Well, not this show, but been on the Movie Change Up podcast before. He's a big Star Trek fan, and he's hasn't liked a lot of the new Star Trek at all, but he's really enjoying Strange New World. So I would say if you're looking to get back into Star Trek, which is part of the show, it's Paramount Plus. We'll cover, you know, Paramount Plus shows. Check out Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
While we're talking about Paramount Plus, I will say they're dropping a Orphan prequel this week, Orphan First Kill. Also coming out in theaters, but it's a simultaneous release to Paramount Plus. And it reviews just came out like a couple hours ago, and they're surprisingly positive, so I'm going to actually give that one a shot. In any reality, I thought, oh, it's straight to Paramount Plus streaming prequel to The Orphan. That's going to be terrible, but somehow it got good reviews, so I'm going to check that one out. But we're on Disney Plus right now.
I want to ask a question, not to spoil The Orphan, since I think I'm trying to figure out what movie that's the movie that has the twist at the end, and it's like the family adopts a little girl.
Yes.
Okay, that's the movie, I think it is. All right.
So in The Orphan, the family adopts a little girl, and she seems off, you know, she seems like she's kind of almost violent and has these kind of like forward moments with the parents, where they think something might be off with their daughter, and there's more and more odd behavior as the movie goes along. And then at the end of the movie, you get a really
spoiler. Don't spoil it for people.
You get a cool reveal. That's all I'm saying. You get the reveal.
People are gonna probably figure it out now.
But there's a reveal. You get a reveal of what's going on with the girl, you know. And now you get a prequel coming out about the girl when she's younger, with the same actress. Years later. All right, so we got on Disney Plus this week. You've also got Lightyear recently added. I had that. One of us had that on our draft. I don't remember which of the three of us it was. It was not me, though.
I think it was Johnny, because it wasn't me either. I haven't watched it, so I need to update that. I haven't updated that in a month. I got to fire up Box Office Mojo and go back and figure out when's the last time I updated our draft.
And you've also got High School Musical, the musical, the series. Season 3 is continuing to go. I watched a couple episodes of that.
How is it compared to the first 2 seasons?
I'm liking it more than the second season, but not as much as the first.
Okay. Okay, that's fair.
And then we also had Light and Magic, which I think was a highlight of the week for both of us. It about industrial light and magic and the effect side of Star Wars, and then kind of further along in their career all the way down to Jurassic Park. So you get kind of like the birth of this effect studio, and then you get to see like their impact and their legacy from making ships in Star Wars all the way to making dinosaurs chase a car in Jurassic Park. You know, you get to see like the evolution of the effects world through the lens of ILM.
Yeah, I've watched the first episode so far, and I would say if you're a fan of like movies and movie making and behind the scenes stuff, definitely check out Light and Magic on Disney Plus. It's basically about a docuseries about how industrial light and magic came to be. It's kind of like a weird way, at midway through watching it, because I watched it on my way home from work. It almost in a weird way felt like my Avengers, of like seeing all these people I've seen appear in different documentaries talking about different areas of filmmaking all together in this one documentary about the creation of industrial light and magic. I'm like, oh, I've seen him in like a Star Wars documentary, or oh, I've seen him in like a Marvel documentary or a movie documentary. So it's kind of cool seeing all these people.
Yeah, it's very cool. You know, it's very definitive. It's a long series. I think it's like 6 episodes. So you get like the genuine look at the history of the studio. And I think if you're someone who, like I have friends who say, oh, Star Wars is overrated. I don't understand why it's so popular. Why does everyone talk about Star Wars? And this is a show that I would show to them to say, like, it's not just about like the one movie of Star Wars. You know, it's about like the whole movement that Star Wars kind of inspired in cinema, you know, and ILM impacted the industry so, so much. And this documentary really gives you a look, not just on how they made Star Wars, but on their whole legacy in that era, you know, decades of work that from ILM, from the set Star Wars all the way up to like the late 90s and the turn of the century. So you get to see how that studio really did shape the industry that we know. And even if you don't like Star Wars, I think you can watch that and say like, well, sure, I don't like Star Wars, but because of Star Wars, I got Jurassic Park and I got Indiana Jones and I got 1,000 other movies that ILM brought to life.
Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
And some of those effects are so cool. Like, what made Star Wars so impactful and so unique and so timeless, I think, is the visual effects and the miniatures and those kind of things. Like, that ages so well. You look at those ships in Star Wars and they look real because they pretty much are real. You know, ILM built the tiny little spaceships and recorded them on their cameras, and that's why it looks so good, because it's a real spaceship.
Yeah, definitely. It's very interesting. And I'm actually going to watch the rest of it as soon as I can, because I was definitely very much intrigued by it.
We also got I Am Groot this week. I didn't finish I Am Groot. I watched the first couple of episodes and they're fun. I'm really impressed by the visuals, I think, especially because the whole entire thing is CGI from what I can tell. It's really, really well animated. You know, it reminds me of like The Lion King in a way, where they called that live action, but really it was visual effects and they looked pretty good for what they were. But this is like a really, really strong visuals, a lot of color. You get to see Groot kind of off on his adventures, you know, and it's fun to see them experiment with no dialogue too, because obviously Groot doesn't really have any dialogue. All he can say is I am Groot, so they have to kind of experiment with how they're going to like portray the narrative without having the main character be able to talk. I think what holds these back is the length, though. They're so, so short. They're like 3 minutes, some of them. You know, these could have been 10, and I think they would have been a much stronger series. You know, you give them a couple of more minutes where you can really kind of actually have there be some level of like a narrative, and I think it would have had more impact. But like, sure, there's plot and there's cool visuals and like fun gags, but I kind of felt like I was wasting my time after three episodes of this. And I might go back and watch the other three, because I've heard that there's a cameo in the last one from a Guardians of the Galaxy character, so it could be cool to see that character again. But this did not work for me, unfortunately. Not something that's going to resonate with me much after now.
Yeah, I planned on watching it, and then I didn't, because I was like, honestly, I know what my review is going to be. Like, if you're a hardcore MCU fan, or if you're a MCU fan and you have a young child, maybe show them this. But I knew I wasn't going to watch the first episode and be like, man, I need to watch the rest of these. Like, there are some animated projects that happen. I remember when Star Wars Visions came out and I watched that first episode, I was like, man, I got to watch the rest of these. But I know that's not going to happen with I Am Groot, so I didn't even bother.
Yeah, there's a couple of different directions you could have gone with this, and unfortunately it feels like they picked the least interesting one. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have seen a Star Wars Vision style thing where it's like different tales of Groot across the Marvel Galaxy, you know, and you can get like these 10-minute shorts of just Groot doing something in the MCU, but now it's just like you get a 3-minute short of Groot farting and making leaves move.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. I'm depressed I didn't watch that.
Coming up this week, though, we do have some good stuff. She-Hulk premieres in just a couple of days. I'm looking forward to that. The more I hear about it, the more trailers I see, the more I start thinking this is going to be a really fun entry to the MCU. It feels very tonally different than some of the stuff we've gotten before. It feels very much like in that rom-com kind of tone. And I like that she has the fourth wall break. She kind of does like a Deadpool style thing where she talks to the camera and addresses you as the audience and addresses the fact that like she's on a TV show, you know? So I'm really curious to see how that's going to play into the narrative and how much of that fourth wall breaking is it going to be, you know, because the She-Hulk comics do get very weird at times with a lot of the weird characters, a lot of the more cosmic kind of strange side of the MCU, because she's a superhero lawyer, essentially. So she has to take on superhero-related cases. So she ends up sometimes defending some rather strange, deep-cut characters from the Marvel comics in her runs. So it'll be cool to see how deep they dig for the cuts in this show. Because from what I've been hearing from people who have seen the first couple episodes, because the first four episodes are out for critics already, is that there's a lot of cameos, a lot of really good comedy, a lot of surprises. So if you have been watching the MCU stuff recently and you're kind of disappointed that it's not like connecting too much and it's not bringing a lot of the characters in, it doesn't feel like it's building up to something, I feel like She-Hulk is going to be one of those shows that actually does feel like it's part of the larger universe of the MCU, and you're going to have a lot of appearances from known characters and new characters. So I can't wait to see how weird they get with it.
All right. And then we also got young child around, we have the sing-along versions of both Tangled and Beauty of the Beast movies. So if you want to sing and dance, you know, if you know all the words to Be Our Guest and you just want to confirm that you do know, in fact, all the words, you're going to have the sing-along version to watch. So
Tangled is great. If you haven't seen Tangled, it's one of those Disney classics that I feel like doesn't necessarily get the recognition of the others. I think Tangled is a really, really good modern Disney movie. And hey, I mean, if you want to sing along, sing along. Sing along to the Emma Watson Beauty and the Beast if you really want to. You got both of them on here now.
I can't imagine having the option to watch either, and that's the version you would choose. But, you know, to each their own, I guess.
You've got a lot of sing-along versions on there. Frozen, I know, is on there. I think Moana is on there. So you got a lot to choose from for the sing-along versions. Eventually, I'm sure they'll all be on there.
Yeah, I imagine so.
That's... What are you watching this week, Joe, Disney Plus? I imagine it's going to be She-Hulk.
Probably finish off Light and Magic and She-Hulk. I'll get the girlfriend to watch She-Hulk with me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to She-Hulk. You know, I got the girlfriend, but I got the She-Hulk.
Yeah, you know. Jennifer whatever Walters can be your girlfriend, you know?
Yeah, we could have matched on Tinder. Did you see they had a promotion going on where they made a fake She-Hulk Tinder account that was matching with people? And then saying, oh, watch She-Hulk. And I was like, imagine how depressing it is. You're like going for a year on Tinder, like, come on, just match me, please, someone match. And then you're like, oh my God, it's a match. You open it up, it's She-Hulk.
Yeah, that's, I feel like stuff like that backfires on companies when they don't care about that. It's like, yeah, I could remember back on my Tinder days, if I got the notification that I got a match and it was She-Hulk, I would have been like, fuck this goddamn app. But I think that kind of wraps up our Disney Plus.
That does. Speaking of doomed apps, we've got a cursed app to end out that conversation here. You know, we got our Plus for HBO Max. We just got a couple shows to talk about here really quick at the end. You've been going on and on about your reality shows, Joe. So I want to talk about my reality show here, The Rehearsal. Nathan Fielder, he most famous for Nathan For You, the Comedy Central show where he was a bar rescue style, like business rescue show, but it unbeknownst to the business, he's kind of like a parody of that. And he's seeing how far he can push them on that show to see what they will do to fix their business. And in this, it's sort of introspective and personal. It's not fixing the business, it's fixing the person. In the first episode, it's about a man who, in casual conversation with his bar friends, lied and said he had a master's degree. And now he's starting to feel bad about it because he only has a bachelor's degree. And he wants to tell his friends, oh, I don't actually have a master's degree, but he feels like he's in too deep with the lie to say something. So Nathan Fielder creates a one-to-one perfect replica of their bar on a set, down to the seats and the paint and everything, and brings in actors to fill out the entire bar, brings in an actor to play his friend, and then has the character, the guy, the subject, role play tons and tons and tons of various different ways this conversation can go down. Is it going to go down where she yells at him? Is it going to go down where, you know, she tries to hit on him? You know, what are all the possibilities we can account for so that when you actually have this confrontation, it goes the perfect way, you know? And it's called The Rehearsal because he's rehearsing these events with people over and over and over again so that once the time actually comes for them to do this event, it will be perfect and down pat. But the show kind of takes a turn halfway through because he involves himself in one of the rehearsals. So this woman comes on and says, I want to rehearse raising a child. So I'm going to have an actor come in to be a baby. I'm going to have an actor come in later to be a toddler. And we're going to, in high speed, practice what it would be like to be a mother. So he builds her a complete replica house of what her dream home would be. He creates a fake job for her to do and brings in fake actors to play her kid. And there's this whole dynamic of, like, you can only have a baby on set for a couple of hours, so they have to swap out the baby without the mother noticing so that she can be in character the whole time. So it's this really, really intensely maintained reality series where Nathan Fielder kind of steps in and takes a father role in this relationship. So, like, he's the pseudo father to this pseudo kid in this pseudo marriage with the pseudo woman who's not even married to him. And the line between reality and, like, the show they're on becomes so blurred. And you'll see them getting in, like, these big streaming match fights over the kid. And you can see, like, both of them at this point have, like, forgotten that this is not a real thing. And they're very much into this relationship, into this dynamic. So I think if you like that kind of secondhand embarrassment, if you want to see these people kind of, like, lose track of reality a little bit, I love The Rehearsal. The finale of the season's coming up in a couple of days. It's only 6 episodes, and they're half an hour each. So give it a binge. It had it so, so funny and really absurd and bizarre. And I can't wait to see where it goes in the finale because I genuinely do not know. Every episode I hit play on, I'm like, I think I know what's going to happen. And then you get halfway through and you're like, what is happening on the show? So I recommend it. It's very, very bizarre and my favorite show of the year so far.
All right. I've seen people talk about it on Twitter, but I've never checked it out. I've seen clips here and there of Nathan For You, and I really like that. So I'll definitely check out The Rehearsal. I may even watch that tonight as I go to bed.
And we also had a documentary on NFL, the Detroit Lions. Their long-running documentary series, Hard Knocks, came back for a new season this year. It's following the Detroit Lions. I know you're much more of a football person. I'm sure you've seen more of the show than I have because I've seen the one episode of the one new series of it. But what is your history with Hard Knocks and the Detroit Lions, and how did you feel about this?
So I watched a little bit of last season, and I haven't really watched it other than this season. I mean, we've only one episode in, but, you know, I started – just out of nothing else to do, started to get super into the NFL the last 2 years. And then Hard Knocks was coming out last year as the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm like, I'll check this out. And I watched that episode or two. I'm like, this is super boring. And then I went to see what people were saying online. And everyone's like, this is the most boring season of Hard Knocks yet. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to check this. There's no interesting characters, no interesting dynamics. So if you really don't know what Hard Knocks is, though, I'll say it covers the training camp for a different NFL team each year. And there's kind of rules. So any team technically could volunteer to be on Hard Knocks, but none of them really ever want to. And so the NFL can mandate certain teams to be on Hard Knocks, but the qualifications to be mandated are you can't have a first-year head coach, you can't have been to the playoffs in the last 2 years, and you can't have been on Hard Knocks the last 10 years. So this last season, the only teams that qualified were the Jets, the Panthers, and the Lions. All the other teams, they're either having been on Hard Knocks recently, having been on to the playoffs recently, or having a first-year head coach didn't qualify. And the Lions of those three teams actually said, well, if it's going to be one of us, we'd rather it be us. So the Lions actually volunteered this year. And I, as someone who's a diehard Detroit Lions fan, follows all the offseason moves, watches the NFL draft just to see if the Lions draft, I was super excited back in March when they said the Lions are going to be on Hard Knocks, because I know they have a lot of fun personalities, from their coach to the running back to certain players on defense, offense, that I was like, this could be a really fun, interesting season. Great moves from Aiden Hutchinson, the second overall pick from Michigan. His kind of hazing, where if you don't know, pretty much every NFL team, if you're a rookie during training camp, that moment between practice and meetings, if you're a rookie, they're either going to make you, you know, whatever you want to do. You can sing a song, do a dance, perform a skit, just something fun, entertaining to kind of break up the monotony of training camp. And Aiden Hutchinson decided to do a cover of Billie Jean in one of the most fun and interesting and entertaining rookie, you know, hazing things that I've seen, especially on this show. And I really enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to keep watching, even if it was boring, because it's my team, I'd watch it anyway. But I wanted someone, an outsider perspective, someone who doesn't really follow football, definitely doesn't follow the Lions, to see, like, is this entertaining to you? Was this interesting? If we weren't doing a recap of it, would you have any desire to watch episode two?
Yeah, like you said, I'm not a NFL person at all. I've seen, like, a handful of football games, but it's not really something that I go to gravitate towards, especially of the sports. It's like one of the least compelling ones for me to watch, but I had a good time with this. I think what this does is really makes you respect kind of the personalities and the grind that it takes to make this game happen. You know, even if sport that I don't necessarily enjoy, I still want to be able to respect the athleticism that goes into this and the kind of mental strength that it takes to be that successful, you know. And these guys are like pushing their mental and physical like fortitude to like the maximum possible like limit, you know, and they're doing things that are just so physically impressive. And I'm really excited to watch the rest of this show and see how this goes, because I don't know anything about like training camp for the NFL and how it kind of grows as it goes along. So I'm curious to watch the rest of it and see that. But yeah, I really enjoy the coach. I think he's a really entertaining personality. You know, he's exactly what I would imagine like an NFL coach to be like. I think he's really funny.
Yeah, he is a walking quote generator.
Yeah, he's a really funny guy. I'm looking forward to watching this. I think it'll be a good time. And yeah, the Billie Jean cover was definitely a highlight of the episode. The whole entire team starts getting into it, and it's really, really high energy. It was a lot of fun to watch. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching these personalities kind of develop and seeing how they kind of turn to butt heads as it goes along. I'm sure there's going to be some competition as the season gets a little bit longer. And like, so is this is the training for like the upcoming NFL season that's going to be.
Yeah. It's basically for the most part live. Like this Tuesday episode is essentially, so I was like, I've seen interviews now with the directors that cover it essentially. So Liev Schreiber is the narrator of it. They send it to him. He's in Italy right now doing some project, filming a show or a movie or something. He's in Italy right now. They send it to him Tuesday morning. So tomorrow morning, he's going to get the script and everything to do the recording. And then he's going to send it back to them in the afternoon for them to send it to HBO to release at 10 o'clock tomorrow night.
Oh, wow.
So like this episode that we're going to see is basically going to cover probably from last week Monday up until probably today. Well, it probably will go a little bit past the preseason game, which was this last Friday night. So it's concurrent. Like the final three episodes, anything that you'll see in the final three episodes, probably even final four of the, well, there's five episodes. Anything of the final three episodes have not happened yet.
Wow, that's really cool. I like that quick turnaround. You know, because I was wondering, like, how long ago is this? You know, can I go look up on Google and, like, essentially spoil myself of what's the future success of the team is or not? But, like, yes, it's going to be cool to see how they do once the season starts, too, after I've seen their kind of journey at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can tell from the episode that they're very much an underdog team. You know, they haven't really won a lot of games recently, and
they haven't won a playoff game in my lifetime. So,
yeah, you know, I'm all for an underdog. You know, so maybe the Hard Knocks will give them a little bit of boost. You know, morale boost. You're on Hard Knocks. You know, you got to win now.
Yeah, now they're doing the So up until last year, they've never done an in-game season, and now they're doing in-season. Last year, they covered the Colts, and this year, there was like a little MCU-style teaser at the end revealing that they're going to be covering the Arizona Cardinals, and when that episode, and they're basically going to cover the last half of the football season starting November 9th.
Interesting. Arizona
Cardinals season.
Sounds like something else to watch on the show.
Yeah, if it's interesting, compelling, we'll talk about it. Anything else you got to say about Hard Knocks other than that I'm excited for it?
Episodes. No, that's all I've got on Hard Knocks. I'll be watching the rest of it. Last conversation topic here. A little quick topic is I want to get your hype check on the House of the Dragon. I don't know your history of Game of Thrones. I don't even know if you watched Game of Thrones when it was on or not. But are you going to be watching House of the Dragon? Are you excited for it? Or are you nervous after considering the quality that Game of Thrones kind of sunk to by the end? How are you feeling?
So I think I caught Game of Thrones. I think I was like a season. I didn't watch the first season when it came out, but I think maybe the first and second season. But I know by season three, I was watching live as it came out. And I was a Game of Thrones apologist for the final episodes being like, everyone's like, oh, it feels rushed. I don't get it. And I was just like, I had the image of like this season or this show is essentially has been a ticking time bomb this whole time and waiting for spoiler alert, I guess, for if this spoils Game of Thrones for you, you weren't going to watch it anyways. But basically watching the Wick go down to the bomb was essentially waiting for Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen to meet. And then meeting was like the bomb explosion. And now we're just like towards the end. So any like rush I felt was like, I feel like that's how it's supposed to be. Like it's these two. We were just waiting and waiting essentially for these two to meet. Now they met. And that's kind of the big climactic moment of the show. And I wasn't a big apologist until the final episode. And when the final episode hit and ended, I like went back and agreed with everybody else that was like, this felt rushed. Didn't really make sense. The writing definitely had a drop. And I think there's a lot of reasons. I think overall for, I think the creators of the show, Benioff and Weiss, I think they get a touch, maybe too much hate for how the show ended. But I also don't think they get enough credit for the early parts of the show. Like before the show came out, those books were considered to be unadaptable. So the fact that they, I mean, I understand these people have, Benioff and Weiss have nothing to do with House of the Dragon, but just for a Game of Thrones conversation, the show was considered, or the books were considered to be unadaptable, and they adapted those first basically four or five seasons into some of the best television ever made. And I feel like even season 6 and 7 were bad. There was a slight drop in quality. But part of me wonders if pretty much how it ended was exactly how George R.R. Martin planned to end it. And now that everyone hates it so much, it's what's taking the book so long to finish. Because now he has to basically write entirely new endings. Because he realized.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that. Because, yeah, for me, it was almost like the events that happened weren't the problem as much as it was like the execution of how they were written to happen on the screen, you know? So. Yeah. Even if it is the same narrative that happens, I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out differently. If we ever even get that far in the books, I'm starting to doubt they come out with the House or the next one at this point. But
my theory is he has the books written and it's waiting for him to die because if people don't like them, he doesn't want to face the backlash. He just wants to die a happy man who got to write the first few books of A Song of Ice and Fire that everyone loves. And you know what, if he dies and the books come out and people love these books and are like, oh, that's kind of a similar plot to the show but done way better, then great for him. And if the books suck, then he never has to hear about it.
I'm hoping that the show is good though. I would love to have a return to the Game of Thrones world. I loved that show for years and years. I was writing reviews for that every week on a website for professionally, and like that was the first time I was writing professionally in my career. It was very cool to do, and I was very invested at that point. Obviously, I was writing every week, very, very long detailed reviews and breakdowns. Those were good times. And House of the Dragon, even though Game of Thrones kind of flopped at the end, I don't think it all pretty much fell down on Benioff and Weiss to me, and they're not involved in this show. So for me, the hype is pretty high. You know, at least the interest is high. I don't know about the hype, but like my curiosity is high. I'm going to give it a couple of episodes.
When does it come out? Because I feel like there's talk online about, like, I'll see commercials and stuff for it, but, like, out in the world, I feel like I don't hear any discussion about it at all.
It's very soon. It's, like, a week from now or something.
But there could just be apprehension about it, where that first maybe the first, like, two or three episodes come out, and everyone's like, no, this is, like, peak Game of Thrones quality. Then maybe it'll blow up, and then, like, season one finale, it's, like, this big event, similar to how, like, Game of Thrones, like, that premiere or that season finale was, like, massive online, and season two premiere could just be as big as, you know, like, season, you know, any of the other premieres or finale of Game of Thrones, where those were events. Like, I still remember season eight premiere, like, a group of us met at, like, a friend of a friend's house, and it was, like, this big thing, and by the finale, like, no one even cared to watch it anymore.
Yeah, I'm curious. It comes out this Sunday, so we've got less than a week until it drops.
Yeah, we definitely need to watch it then.
I think the pressure is on for that first episode. You know, I think they're going to have a lot of curious eyes, a lot of conversation. And if that first episode delivers and it has a lot of promising stuff, especially if, like, they end it on a big hype moment, you know, if the dragon swoops down and blows something up, or I don't even know what we're going to get out of the show action-wise, but there's going to be a lot more dragons, a lot more action. So I think that'll appeal to people a little bit more. They'll say, you know, I love Game of Thrones for the dragons. You know, even when the show went bad, the action was still kind of good. So maybe they'll see some clips of dragons doing cool stuff, and that'll hook them back in. You know, I'm hoping it's not just all action, though. That's kind of my big fear, is that they're gonna up the action and the scope and the scale so much that it's not really like the political thriller that Game of Thrones was. You know, because I got into Game of Thrones because it was that mix of the political thriller and also the fantasy side, and those two things kind of like blurring together as the show goes along. So this is gonna be very, very high fantasy, much more fantasy than Game of Thrones was. There's gonna be dragons and no shit magic, and like a lot more of the fantasy stuff than the politics stuff. So I'm curious if that's gonna do as well as Game of Thrones, or if it's gonna have a kind of a lesser appeal because it's not as necessarily intelligent as the show was.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Like, as Game of Thrones started very much of like political show set in a mystical world, or like a basically medieval times, and then as the show progressed, they got a little bit less and less politics and a little bit more and more fantasy, and I think that's what they were going for, and that's fine. But I'd be curious to see where House of the Dragon lands on that spectrum.
Yeah, I can't wait. We've only got a week, so I'm definitely gonna check that one out.
All right, and I believe our final topic isn't really about a show, it's more just general housekeeping, and that's us talking about which service won the week. It's something I want to kind of keep track of and see overall generally who's doing what streaming service do we feel is doing the best. Maybe one will surprise us, but I'll give my vote first, give you a little bit more time to think. But I haven't dabbled much, and so it's kind of a vote that doesn't have much behind it, but I'm gonna go back to the streaming service we've reviewed the most, and I'm gonna say I liked Light and Magic so much, and nothing else really rose above it, that I will say that the win for me this week gets Disney Plus, is Disney Plus, is because I'm excited to go back and watch Light and Magic, where I'm enjoying Indian matchmaking, but I'm not dying to go back and continue watching the episodes like I am Light and Magic. So for me, Light and Magic is gonna get the bump, or Disney Plus is going to get my vote for the week.
It's a tough call for me because the best thing that I watched this week was probably Prey, and that was on Hulu. But when I'm looking at the whole lineup of the platforms here, for me, I'm going to have to agree with you and say Disney Plus. You know, I Am Groot didn't do much for me, but that was just one thing out of a whole list they added. And I mentioned the Orville. I really want to check out the Orville. I want to watch Lightyear because I haven't had a chance to watch that yet. It's also in the IMAX expanded ratio, so that'll be cool to check that out. Light and Magic is really, really good. And they've been doing a solid job recently of expanding their roster, adding stuff like Deadpool in there, adding stuff like Logan. And that was just within the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to go ahead and give the first win here to Disney Plus. And it's a unanimous win.
All right. And so that brings us to our final topic, and that is our Leaving Soon section, and kind of just bring up maybe a movie or show that is leaving streaming soon, and we just want to bring up like, hey, this is kind of your last chance to watch it. And I'll go first. So mine, it's a movie on HBO Max, movie it's in my top 25 favorite of all time, and that is the Steven Soderbergh directed George Clooney Brad Pitt starring Ocean's 11. Just a fun movie. It's on TV a lot, so you miss it on HBO Max, you'll get to see it somewhere soon. But if you want to watch it commercial-free and you don't own it, maybe you haven't watched it in a while, definitely check out the greatest love story ever made, Ocean's 11.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about one that's not as uplifting. Silence, the Martin Scorsese movie starring Andrew Garfield and Liam Neeson. I'm picking this one because I think it's a bit of an under-the-radar Scorsese. You know, you have stuff like Irishman and Goodfellas that everybody watches and talks about, but this is one of his kind of off-brand movies that was not about mob or crime or that kind of a thing, and was about these priests kind of struggling with their faith. And it's also very visually gorgeous. I mentioned that Prey has these great exterior shots of like these vistas and these valleys, and this one is similar. It's shot in Portugal, so you get really, really gorgeous shots of like the Portuguese nature and these kind of vast worlds that these people are living in. And he shoots it with like the scope of nature and the scope of the sky really has this like godly presence throughout the movie. And I really think it's a great pick for Martin Scorsese. I think when he talks about religion, he does it so interestingly, and he comes to such a unique perspective. So I think this is definitely one that you should check out if you haven't seen some of Scorsese's off-brand stuff. You know, this came out right after Wolf of Wall Street. Wolf of Wall Street was like a Best Picture nominee and a huge social hit, and then this did not really have any impact. So I think if you want to see a bit of a deeper cut, it's a cool one to check out. It reminds me of like Last Temptation of Christ or Kundun, where he got out of his typical known shtick and did something that feels very personal to him. So I recommend it a lot. It's on Prime, leaving the end of the month, so you have a couple more weeks to check it out if you want to see Scorsese in a totally different light.
All right, I have never actually watched Silence. I may, if I get a free moment when I'm not watching some other things, I may check out Silence and tell you what I think. But I think that wraps up our show for this week. If you have nothing else to add.
No, it was a good show. I had a really good time. It was good to be back talking with you, Joe. And it's fun because we have so much more to talk about now. We got all these streaming platforms to cover. Yeah. So next week, we got all kinds of stuff to cover. We're going to talk about She-Hulk and Night Shift and a couple of the other things you mentioned this week. So it'll be awesome to cover that and see what happens with some stuff like Hard Knocks. You know, we got a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to recommend a show or a movie for us to watch, or you want to let us know, hey, something's coming out and I think you guys would like it, or hey, you just got a question for us, tweet at us, Instagram message us, you know, DM us at Movie Changeup, and talk to the hand.